Welcome to the third episode of the second season of the RJOS podcast. This season, we will be highlighting the winners of the He for She, the She for She, and the Courage Awards. I'm your host, Liana Tedesco. It has been such an honor to connect with our guests, learn more about who they are, how they became our esteemed award winners, and what the Ruth Jackson Orthopedic Society means to them. We also discuss the future and how we, the listeners, can create a better and more equitable future for those interested in orthopedic surgery. My next guest is Dr. Mark Barretts. He is a hand and upper extremity surgeon at the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center. Dr. Barretts is the inaugural winner of the RJOS He for She Award. This award recognizes male orthopedic surgeons who serve as strong mentors and sponsors for women in orthopedics. Dr. Barretts had the honor of working alongside Dr. Freddie Fu at UPMC, for whom the award now honors. Dr. Barretts has spent his career advocating for diversity in orthopedics, and it was wonderful to learn more about his story. Let's get to it. So first and foremost, I would like to thank today's guest, Dr. Mark Barretts, for joining us.
Liana, it is an honor and a pleasure. Thanks so much for including me in the podcast listing.
I'm so excited to have you on. I know a little bit about you because you actually came and gave grand rounds when I was an intern and we did an elbow lab. I don't know if you remember. But for those who don't know you, can you tell them a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I actually grew up outside of Philadelphia. Lived a bunch of different places, including Africa, but my dad was an economics professor. My mom was a music teacher. And so really didn't have much of a background in medicine within our family, but it was something that I was interested in because I liked science and I wanted to do something where I was working with people. And I applied to medical school and had intended to pay for it with a National Health Service scholarship because I was interested in going into family practice. And then when I got to medical school, I was thinking that I was going to switch to surgery, and cardiothoracic surgery was sort of the hotshot subspecialty within surgery at the University of Pittsburgh where I was in school. And my girlfriend and subsequent wife introduced me to orthopedics. She said, there are lots of tools that they use that I think you'd like because I was a woodworker. And so she sort of pointed me in that direction. And I ran into a young attending, Dr. Freddie Fu, who had tremendous enthusiasm for what he was doing. And I just remember looking at him and saying, oh my God, this is the first person that I've met that is deliriously happy about their job. And you know how that is when you meet someone like that, it's very contagious. And so he got me interested in orthopedics. And from there, one of your other questions, I'm kind of preempting your questions, I'm sorry, but was why I chose to go into hand surgery. When I started looking at orthopedics, I realized that a lot of the subspecialties would put you into a specific age group. And one of the things that I loved about family practice, and it was the reason that I, as I said, that I went to medical school, was that you could work with all age groups. And that was a unique thing about hand and upper extremity, because you could have kids that had differences when they were born. You could have young athletes, adults, and folks who were further on in their years that were suffering with arthritis. So it was very appealing to have that broad demographic of people to look after.
I feel like I must have stolen my fellowship interview spiel from you, because that's basically what I always say when people ask me why I went into hand surgery as well. So you obviously, Freddie Fu, who's an incredibly influential person in orthopedic surgery and within the Ruth Jackson Society as well, as the He for She Award is now renamed the Freddie Fu Award. Can you talk a little bit about some of the mentors that you've had over your career, whether it be orthopedic mentors or otherwise?
Yeah, so I think I was very lucky in meeting people in surgery who were generous with their time and generous with their advice, and more importantly, willing to not only give advice the way a mentor does, but support you with specific actions, like putting you on panels, you know, people who function as allies. So I think Dr. Fu was absolutely the first person to put his arm around me and say, Mach, you were like this. This is fun. I believed him, and he was right. And then people like Mel Rosenwasser, Lee Osterman, these are people who I met at meetings, and they really didn't have a reason to go out of their way to support me, but chose to. Peter Stern, somebody who I'd like to be when I grow up. I've told him that a million times. And so I felt pretty fortunate to have people who saw something that they thought was worth supporting.
What do you think the differences are between mentorship and sponsorship?
Yeah, so a sponsor or an ally is someone who takes it a step further. So it's easy to give advice. And I have to tell you, I'm stealing most of the way I think about this from Susan McKinnon, because she's probably the person who helped me crystallize this in my own mind. But it's someone who will say, listen, rather than here's a research project that you can work on, which is often a self-serving activity on the part of mentors, they will say, listen, I see that you have an aptitude for business. I'd like to put you on a panel that examines how we can improve our business acumen within orthopedics. Or I see you as being someone who has great potential for working with children. And I want to introduce you to my friend Scott Kozin, because he's one of those people who just kind of gets it and is pointing us in the right direction when it comes to care. And so they go that extra mile. And I was lucky to have that and saw the value in it, and have tried to incorporate that in my day and my week.
I think it's important because you need a mentor, of course, but you also need a sponsor if you want to kind of take your career to the next step, because it's really hard to open doors that aren't open to you. But if you have the right people in your corner, I think it's, you know, so critical. And finding those people is hard. So what advice would you have for people who are in early stages of their careers, whether it be medical school or residency, fellowship? How do they find people to get in their corner? And what can you do to best position yourself to get those mentors and sponsors?
I mean, I think you have to cast a wide net, because there are people who you may think are an ideal sponsor, and it may turn out that for whatever reason there isn't chemistry between the two of you, and you don't see things similarly in the way that you thought you might. Jennifer Wolf, who was just finished her presidency of the American Society for Surgery of the Hand, had a number of years ago gone up to Marty Boyer and just said, I need a mentor. Will you be my mentor? And he said, absolutely. And so she had no context for doing that other than hearing about him, hearing him speak, and hoping that he would support her, and he did. And so I think first you look at home and see who is around you that might be supportive. And then you can ask those same people, hey, listen, I really want to be the person who understands nerves better than anybody else. Who do you think could help me in that quest?
Right.
And they'll say, yeah, go talk to Susan McKinnon, go talk to Amy Moore, you know, go talk to Jonathan Isaacs, people who are passionate about this stuff, doing it as a part of their day-to-day activities. And you hit it off with them and you're off to the races.
How much of that do you think is introspection on the part of the mentee or the sponsee? Like, you know, you made this point. I want to be the understand nerves better than anyone. So you have to do some of the work on your own. I think we can't, as the mentees, expect everything to come from the mentor or the sponsor.
You can't. And unfortunately, you don't always know what you're going to love in the beginning, right?
Absolutely.
And so again, it is this sort of amoebic motion where you're bumping into walls and something opens up. You see a case that's just really cool, or you hear someone speak and you say, I think I'd like to do this. And then the beauty of being in medicine is that what you think you want to do at the beginning of your career doesn't restrict you from being something else.
Right.
And so if you start out doing one thing and you go, wow, you know, I thought I was going to love this, but I don't love it as much as I thought I did. And then you take a different direction, you reinvent yourself. Glenn Gaston is a great example of that. Glenn, I met when he was early in practice, and because I was taking care of professional athletes and he was too, we were the sports hand guys, right? Glenn, Michelle Carlson, myself, we were on a lot of panels together. And Glenn wanted to be the guy who was the sports hand person. And then he started doing some work with TMR. And I asked him to come visit us and teach us about it. And then I went down and visited him. I went to his clinic. And after seeing one of his patients who was unable to play a guitar because of his partial hand amputation, and after the surgery that Glenn did and Brian Loeffler did, was able to go back to playing guitar, this guy had this huge smile on his face. And Glenn turned to me and he said, if you had told me 15 years ago that my greatest joy in practice would come from treating amputees, I'd say you're crazy. But that reinvention for him was a big deal. Mm-hmm. And I think if you talk to other people, we've all sort of done that to a certain extent.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point, that in medicine and the career we've chosen, or if you are to choose our career path, you're often not pigeonholed into any specific thing. Of course, there are exceptions, but I think having that flexibility and really the ability to kind of reinvent yourself and who you want to be is so important. I want to switch gears a little bit because I know that you have a lot of interests and hobbies outside of orthopedics. And I'd love for you to talk a little bit about how important that is in your career, in your life, and how that really gives you more of a well-rounded experience.
Yeah, I've come to appreciate that so much more over time. So yesterday, I have a clinic that's in a semi-rural community in the morning, and I meet the fellow that's on my service at Starbucks, and we ride to this clinic together, see patients until about 11:30, and then I built an hour and a half into my lunch break. And from that clinic, we stop at my farm, and I feed my chickens, and I collect eggs, and I put the fellow on a quad or something to drive around and have fun while I'm doing this. And then when we get back into the car, I ask them how they feel. I said, how are you feeling right now? And yesterday, the fellow on my service, Brian Foster, said, I feel amazing. This was so much fun. I went up into the field. I was riding around the cows. The view from the top of the hill is awesome. And I said, yeah, that's why we do this, because these little breaks, even though they're very inefficient, are what makes your job sustainable, right?
Yeah.
So whatever it is, whether it's listening to music or reading, cooking, you got to find ways to build that into your day, because what we do is really, really hard, and it is really stressful. And the hardest thing is that first 6 months in practice, where you question every single thing that you do. And so, and I don't think anybody understands how much pressure that puts on a young physician. And so you got to have something, whether it's a run or a movie or whatever.
Now it's great to hear your perspective. I think, especially in residency and fellowship, in training in general, and in early career, it's easy to have such a narrow focus because you really want to do the right thing for your patients. You want to make sure you're doing a good job. And it's easy to say, this is the only thing that matters right now. But people have families, they have interests outside of this. We do an important job, but it's not everything. So keeping that in the back of your mind is really important, and reminding, you know, young people that you should not forget about it early on, because if you forget early, you'll get lost by the time you have the time or feel like you have the time. I'd love to know kind of how you learned about Ruth Jackson and the Orthopedic Society. How did that come to be something that came into your purview?
By accident.
A common theme, I will say.
Yeah, it was by accident. Amy Ladd and I are contemporaries. We interviewed together. We have been friends and colleagues for over 30 years. And when she was president of the Ruth Jackson Orthopedic Society, she said, yeah, we're really struggling financially. We need members. I feel like this organization has tremendous potential, but it needs to be pushed up the hill a little bit. And I said, well, can I join? Would it be helpful if I were able to join? And she's kind of looked at me quizzically. Said, I don't know. So I think I was one of the first male members. I'm not positive. I think
that's awesome.
Elf and Dempsey Springfield and maybe Scott Steinman were among the first men that were part of RJOS.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
How do you think becoming a member has affected you, or what have you learned from your time as part of Ruth Jackson?
Well, to be honest with you, when I first joined, I did it as a favor to Amy. Mm-hmm. And then they put out a request for committees, and I was at a stage in my career where I was done with committees. I'd been involved at a number of different levels with different organizations, and I was just sort of over it. And then this call for applications for the Professional Development Committee came up, and I thought, you know what, that is something that would be fun, because I like things that involve novel programming, and that's really what organizations need. And so it kind of gave me a little bit of a new lease on life with the organization, getting involved with that. And that's been a fun thing.
What type of programming did you help develop?
Yeah, so I started a program that aimed to connect women in orthopedics with women in industry. And I had for a long time enjoyed trying to design things. Mm-hmm. And so I'd had some interactions with one organization in particular where I had done some design work. And One of the people who I'd worked closely with and had a lot of respect was a woman within that industry. And I was talking to her. I said, you know, you have this incredible wealth of experience. It would be kind of cool if I were able to get a young woman in orthopedics to be able to get your perspective on what it means to be involved with industry in an ethical fashion. And I think that there are things that you would learn from these women as well. And so the program became what's now called Bump Up. And so we're in the process of, it kind of fell on hard times during COVID, but we're in the process of reinitiating that program. And it basically is a pairing, a one-on-one reciprocal mentorship between women in orthopedics and women in industry. If you take a 35-year-old in the orthopedic industry, there's a good chance that she has held either two or three jobs within different industry. And so she's got a lot of savvy about negotiating for contracts and protecting time and negotiating for maternity leave and any of a variety of things, and also knows the inroads to be able to do design work with those companies. An orthopedic surgeon at that age is probably either negotiating for her first job or maybe a second job and isn't savvy about contract negotiations. But what the orthopedic surgeon knows that is hard for the woman in industry is what's important to orthopods. So messaging.
Yeah.
She can say, listen, you can't walk into an OR and say that because there's no basis for it.
Right.
But if you read these three articles and you will understand better the context for the implant that you believe is favorable. So I think there's a lot of potential. We did it for a couple of years. I think it worked out beautifully, and we want to rekindle the fires of Bump Up.
Needs to be revived. I think that's a great program. I think this idea of collaboration and Ruth Jackson being a place where you can learn about the things that are not necessarily clinical is so important, and like really what the heart of the organization is about. You know, we have subspecialty societies, we have the AOS, but organizations like Ruth Jackson are meant to, you know, give people an opportunity to collaborate and network on things that no one is really teaching you about. And the only way I think to know about these things is through experience. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I think you're right on. Again, it comes down to casting a wide net, because you never know what's going to tickle your fancy. You never know what's going to make your work week enjoyable and sustainable. I hate to beat sustainable to death, but it's not easy to stay at the same job for a long time. Mm-hmm. And it's particularly not easy when there are so many stressors now that, frankly, I didn't have. My generation loves to say how hard it was for us. It was way easier. It was way easier. We didn't have, I just got an email a second ago that popped up on my banner that, you know, you have the following modules, your annual mandatory modules to complete.
Of course.
It's infuriating, right?
Yeah.
And it's 1,000 cuts.
Right.
Because you have electronic medical records, you have these different forms of compliance that do not enhance patient care. Mm-hmm. Frankly.
Right, yeah. Right?
And so finding what really is exciting for you, whether it's advocacy through RJOS or finding a little niche within your subspecialty, that's the key to making it last.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you think the landscape of orthopedics has changed and evolved throughout your career? Like, what are the big, we're talking about the specifics of death by a thousand paper cuts or electronic cuts, I guess. But in terms of the culture of orthopedics, how has that changed and evolved?
Yeah, it's a great question. And you sent me this in advance, and I had a little time to think about it. We did an article on allyship where I related something that I'd experienced. So when I was looking at different subspecialties, I seemed to fit in with the family practice folks, and I seemed to fit in with the cardiothoracic folks. But I actually wasn't very much like the orthopedic surgeons at the University of Pittsburgh, in particular the residents. Mm-hmm. And so most of them were Ivy League football players. And that was sort of the theme. And so I actually didn't see myself very much in them. And honestly, if it hadn't been for Freddie Fu, who was also an anomaly, he did not fit in. Mm-hmm. If it hadn't been for him, I probably would not have done it. Mm-hmm. And so what I think is cool about orthopedics is that orthopedics still has a long way to go, but it really is evolving. And you know, what you want more than anything else in medicine, more than any other profession, is you want it to be representative.
Right.
Okay. If you work for Google, they want a million different perspectives. If you're an astrophysicist, it may not be as critical to have a representative population. What you want is astrophysicists who can solve problems. But generally, the more diverse the group is, the more productive it's going to be, the better it's going to be. But in medicine, who can argue with the value of physicians representing their community, the way they look, how they worship, how they cook food, you know, all of those things allow you to understand who you're taking care of.
Right.
To do a better job. So it's where we're going. We're way behind everybody else, mm-hmm. but it is happening.
And why do you think, you know, we're so far behind some of the other subspecialties, or what do you think the biggest challenge is for us?
I think it's a combination of things. It's not only that it was a specialty for white guys. You know, it was, honestly, it wasn't that desirable a profession. Mm-hmm. I kid people and say, we're a bunch of boneheads, but that, you know, before it became uber competitive, probably in the mid 80s, the rock stars in surgery were the cardiothoracic surgeons and the neurosurgeons, and mm-hmm. orthopedic surgeons, you know, weren't the cream of the crop. But I think a couple things made it desirable. And unfortunately, one of them, I think, was just that it was so lucrative.
Right.
And I think that drove a lot of people to consider it. And then, you know, you had some brilliant people who got into the field, and you started to realize the impact of improving someone's musculoskeletal state. And people started going, well, this is kind of cool. And, you know, any organization tends to be insular. And orthopedics was very insular. And orthopedics also, I don't think, when I was looking at it, was that desirable to the really bright, talented women in medicine. Mm-hmm. They migrated to other subspecialties. We were fortunate at the University of Pittsburgh to have some really great women in the program. Uh, but they were a huge minority. It was, you know, one woman a year in a program that had somewhere between 7 and 9 residents.
Yeah.
So,
you know, you were fortunate in where you trained and where you've worked that it has been probably a little bit more inclusive maybe than other places due to some mentors that you had at those institutions. So what does it mean to you to have won the He for She Award?
It was a huge honor. I was, my sponsor for that was Julie Adams, who's a woman who I've known for a long time. And there were, I know some of the other women who supported the nomination, and I'm very appreciative to them because it's probably in the top 3 things that have happened to me professionally. And so I'm proud of it. And it's something that needs to be perpetuated, because whatever you can do to acknowledge people who are going to go out of their way to support others, particularly when you're trying to create a representative community in medicine, you should do. And the She for She thing's a big deal.
Yeah.
It's huge, right? Because, you know, women tend to think of things in a horizontal fashion. They're not always supportive of each other.
Yeah.
So somebody who goes out of their way to do that, it's a big deal.
Yeah, I think taking the time to honor people who are acting in the best interest of others as well as themselves is really, you know, I think it's important to give people that acknowledgement, because there are a lot of times when maybe you don't do it to be acknowledged, of course, but it always makes you feel good that you've made some sort of impact. So we've talked about where we've been and where we are now. And I'd love to talk about where we're going and how you think that we as a community can improve the diversity, equity, inclusion efforts in orthopedic surgery moving forward.
Yeah, it's a wonderful question. And what's great about it is that people are coming from it at a lot of different directions. So there are things like the Perry Initiative,
right,
that is aiming for high school kids. There are some women that are working on initiating programs earlier than that, you know, 5th and 6th grade, because they believe that that's impactful. We just completed a survey of graduating medical students to look at perceptions of orthopedics from people who had not chosen orthopedics as a didn't apply for that in the match.
Oh, I look forward to seeing the results from that.
Yeah, yeah.
Curious.
And so there's a million different ways to come at it, but it's something that has to be supported. I told Don Laporte that I want to have an award for the best paper presented by an RJOS member on diversity at the Academy.
Love that.
And so, you know, I think you have to come up with ways to incentivize people. At the University of Pittsburgh, I just started a grant program for people that want to do a project on DEI. Mm-hmm. So you got to there's a lot of really smart people in medicine, right? A lot of really creative people. And you just got to find ways to make their job easy, because they're going to come up with ideas and it's going to help.
Yeah. I think the idea that coming at it from many angles is important, because there's obviously not one solution, because if there was, I think that we probably would have come up with it by now. But it's great to hear your perspective. So in closing for our conversation, what advice would you give your younger self, or what advice do you wish someone had given you now that you are where you are?
Don't freak out. When I was growing up, we lived on a little farm in Maryland, and I did not put very much effort into high school, and in college I struggled, and did not get into medical school the first time, and I was devastated. And I ended up working on Capitol Hill for a year, and it was a huge thing for me to do something different and develop a different perspective, get a little bit older, get a little bit more mature. And I think if you just try as best you can to savor each step and take each step in stride, knowing that you're going to migrate toward what you're meant to do, I think it makes things a little bit easier. Because I, not getting into medical school the first time, put a chip on my shoulder for about 25 years, which is probably a good thing. But I felt like I really had to prove myself. And I think if I had taken a breath back then and said, you know, it's going to work out, the path would have been a little easier.
I don't know. I think that chip might have helped you out. So don't freak out is good advice, but also, you know, I think understanding what you're worth and how hard you worked is important. Like people should acknowledge their own hard work. I think we often sell ourselves a little short.
That's a better way to put it, Leanne.
But it's true. It is.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Barrett. I really enjoyed our conversation and hearing your perspective on who you are, where you come from, where we are now, and where we're going.
Dr. Tedesco, it's been an honor and a pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you're interested in learning more about some of the programs offered by the Ruth Jackson Society or getting involved in communities, please check out our show notes. We'll see you next time.